Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So this happened at Phillips High School in Bronzeville yesterday. You're going to hear from Chief of Detectives Brendan Denahan, and then parents who witnessed, what do you think, shooting.
We had a security guard who opened up a door, and immediately there was an offender in the street area who started shooting in the security guard's direction.
Several parents, including the mother of the 14-year-old victim who was shot, were waiting to meet their kids outside the school, and some apparently witnessed the shooting.
It's ridiculous. It's senseless. All this shooting for no apparent reason. It's crazy.
Community activist Andrew Holmes has a daughter who attends the school. He met with the girl's mother at the hospital.
She could have easily lost her daughter. All of those teenagers that go to Phillips High School, it could have been anyone's daughter, anyone's son, with that projectile going straight through that door.
So that was ABC 7 reporting.
Yeah, John Garcia.
A security guard and a 14-year-old girl shot, both thankfully expected to recover. But the girl was shot three times, the security guard six times.
Six times, yeah. In the back, and he's going to survive. He's in better shape than she is. He's in fair condition. She's in critical.
And let me say something about this transition from the identitarians to the identitarians from Tiny Dancer, because I've heard some noise, you know, the last couple months as the city has completely unraveled about, oh, you know, don't you miss Tiny Dancer? No.
No.
Let me explain something. What we have now is at least in part caused by Tiny Dancer. You know why? Well, because he was an identitarian collaborator, number one. He's a political hack. He's transactional, amoral. Number two, his cover-up of the Laquan McDonald shooting for political purposes bred the cynicism about the police and the city that allowed for these identitarian hucksters from Triple Threat to Kim Fox to prey on people's fears, irrational fears, to prey on people's racial animus and usher in this identitarian 2.0 era where now the city has been completely given over to predators.
And also, too, he was trying to save money, so he broke up the detective visions. He had five, and now he has three.
Yeah, well, that's, so, that's a process
right,
issue.
That's a problem. Any officer I talk to, or you know, detectives, like, our hands are tied. We don't have enough men. There's not men or women. There's not enough manpower out there.
Yeah
that's an ancillary issue. I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
that he created this toxic culture.
Dude, there has been no one at the city level, particularly on the fifth floor, but really at the city level that I can think of. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm missing somebody who's obvious, in elective office who is innocent of contributing to what the city has become. Nobody who's been there for more than a minute. No one.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
And it is worth reminding everybody, just I know people understand this, and this is a meme, and this is now platitudinous, but Tim Evans, Lori Lightfoot, Tony Preckwinkle, Kim Fox, Chris Welch, what do they have in common?
They're all African-American.
Yeah, they're black folks.
Black folks.
And then you have, you know, your pro forma champagne socialist Mercedes Marxist in Pritzker. Mm-hmm. and you have your Oak Park Marxist in Don Harmon, and there's your leadership team for the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago and the county of Cook. So this is particularly poignant this week because of the video update that FOP President John Cantanzara gave yesterday, talking about the FOP's position with respect to the vax mandate, this Thursday midnight deadline that has been imposed by Triple Threat. You think the weekends this summer have been bad now? If this game of brinkmanship goes the way of the FOP, in other words, if Triple Threat doesn't blink like she's wont to blink before the Chicago Teachers Union when they demand their latest round of blank checks, then you may want to think about making travel plans from Chicago this weekend. We'll get to that. Here's Cantanzara explaining what the FOP's position is with respect to this vaccine mandate.
This is very clearly not a job action, not a call for a strike, none of that illegal stuff that I'm sure the city is going to try and make it out to be. If the city maintains its current course, come midnight on Thursday / Friday morning, members will be forced into a no-pay status that did not complete the portal information or subject to testing thereafter. That's their last position. Here's our position. The city from the beginning has said that the religious exemption is the same as the conscientious exemption allowed under state statute. It is not. It is totally separate. But they have not made an accommodation for that separate exemption. We will. We're going to provide three forms later today for religious, for medical, and for the conscientious exemption. We're asking members to submit those on Thursday, not anytime sooner. Submit those all on Thursday. Give everything at one time, and that's it. Do not fill out the portal information. You are under no obligation to do that other than the city's demand. Once you do that, we can never get that information back. We have no assurances from the city that that is secure, what that information is going to entail as far as going forward, who it's going to be shared with, etc. That is all part of the subjected mandatory bargaining that they have refused to do to this point. So do not fill out the portal information.
Do not fill out the portal information, and they're passing out forms to be submitted to FOP. That will be, frankly, in preparation for a class action, unlawful, basically an unlawful legal practice
right.
grievance that they're ready to file as soon as the deadline passes and cops go into no pay status,
right.
which Cantanzara says he's going to do in solidarity with those cops that go into no pay status.
Good. So think about this, folks. In 52 hours, the mayor's putting approximately half the police department in the no pay status, and they're not going to work. We're talking about thousands of police officers. So, yeah, you're right. Get your plans, change your plans if you're staying here this weekend, and get the hell out of the city.
And, you know,
she's not budging. This is her yesterday. She's not budging. We asked her again.
October 15th is real.
Real.
We'll be announcing more developments next week. But we've got to get people vaccinated.
No.
Yeah, she's not budging, just as she wasn't budging with the Chicago Teachers Union. We'll see.
She folds like cards for them.
Cantanzara explaining that, you know, that sort of pronouncement from Triple Threat is just a way to Chicken Little cops into compliance who do not want to comply. And this was his prediction, if the deadline passes and there's no coming to the table by Lightfoot, what the weekend will look like and who will be responsible.
All I can tell you is if we suspect the numbers are true and we get a large number of our members to stand firm on their beliefs that this is an overreach and they're not going to supply the information in the portal or submit the testing, then it's safe to say the city of Chicago will have a police force at 50% or less for this weekend coming up. That is not because of the FOP. That is 100% because of the mayor's unwillingness to budge from her hard line. So whatever happens because of that manpower issue, that falls at the mayor's doorstep. This could have all been avoided, but it literally has been like everything else with this mayor for the last 2.5 years. do it or else, because I said so. Mm-hmm. Well, we say otherwise.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. Bill and Glen Ellen, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, you know, all of these shootings, all of this, it's not going to change until people stop voting for it. And even with the shootings you talked about at the beginning of the show, these people will march out and vote for the same Democrats again. Or if they replace Lightfoot and Fox, they will just replace them with the other Lightfoot and Fox, and they'll vote for them, and it'll be the same policy. You know, until they decide they're tired of it and vote these people out, it's not going to change. And they keep voting them in. It's insane.
Yeah, because they promise them things.
Democrats. Thanks for the call, Bill.
I mean, Dan, murder, shootings, carjackings, you know, they're through the roof. But it was so bad last night, the busiest ambulance in the city was stolen. And then it crashed into the Gold Coast. And they still haven't found the perpetrators who did that. But this is going to be a very scary situation.
Maybe when Kamala Harris is done investigating the root causes of Central Americans coming to the border to try to get into America, she can examine the root causes of Chicagoans leaving the city for anywhere else. Joe in his car.
Dan and Amy, good morning. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to give a shout out to the police officers out there in Chicago and everywhere else, but Chicago in particular, stand strong, stand tall. Don't allow them to manipulate into doing something that you do not want to do. The Building Trades Association has capitulated to mandates, and now they're making everybody get vaccine, a shot if you want to work on certain jobs. So we're already feeling the heat. So I tell you to stay strong, brothers, and don't capitulate. If you want to get the vax, it's your business. But if you don't, we have to be protected, and that's what your union's doing. So support Cat Zara, because I do, and I'm not even a cop. So thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call, Joe.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, talking about vax mandates with respect to first responders, with respect to healthcare professionals, with respect to pilots and those in the transport of goods. In other words, the professions that have a lot of leverage if they decide to go galt and walk away from their jobs. You heard FOP, Chicago FOP boss John Canzara suggesting that if Lightfoot doesn't come to the negotiating table on this matter, you could have 50% or more of Chicago police go on no-pay status as of midnight on Thursday because they won't comply. 50% reduction in manpower for this weekend, Chicago police.
And that's what, you know, we the highest murders, shootings, carjackings up are through the roof. We couldn't survive an hour.
In Seattle, there's the prospect of the Seattle Police Department having to terminate as much as 40% of their police force. And you know what has happened to Seattle since the summer of love last year. You have people walking away. I guess the perspective of the vax mandators, the COVIDians, is, you know, everybody's replaceable. And to some extent that's true, but not without consequence. I mean, give you another example. These professions in particular that we're focused upon. UCLA anesthesiologist Dr. Chris Rake videoing himself being escorted out of UCLA Medical Center for not complying with the vax mandate. An anesthesiologist.
They are escorting me out of the building. What's your title, sir?
Don't come near me.
What's your title?
Don't come near me.
Why? Because they're okay. Watching for the camera.
And this is what happens when you stand up for freedom, and when you show up to work, willing to work, despite being unvaccinated. And this is the price you have to pay sometimes. But what they don't realize is that I'm willing to go lose everything. Job, paycheck, freedom, even my life for this cause. Be well. United we stand. Divided we fall.
78% of American adults have at least one dose. 95% of Americans over the age of 65 have at least one dose.
And that's the group that this affects the most. I mean, what are we doing here? And we're not even considering natural immunity, which they do in Europe. That's why if you have had COVID in Europe, you only get one vaccination, well, not two. And then it's also on your passport. So if you don't get vaccinated at all, you have natural immunity. But we're ignoring that angle, too. But that's an ancillary issue. But it's
well, this is one of the issues that was brought up by Casey Murray. He's the president of the Southwest Airlines Pilot Association, the pilots union there. He was on CNBC yesterday explaining their position with respect to the vax mandate.
The vaccine mandate and where we are with the lawsuit is really just to get the company to sit down and talk to us and discuss some of our issues that our peers have done, and we see where their vaccination rates are. So all we're trying to do is to get them to sit down and talk to us, which we haven't seen. We've been pushing them for 10 months to do that. Pilots have to maintain a medical certificate as well as their pilot certificate. So we want to sit down and address how that is going to be affected, how our long-term disability, how our loss of license insurance is going to cover. We also have to address, you know, sort of natural immunity, antibodies, alternative means of compliance. There's many things that we need to discuss.
Right. So to your point, Amy, in addition to that, when he was pressed on whether or not they're encouraging pilots to get vaxxed per the mandate, per the Biden mandate, he basically said, we want a conversation with our employer about it. That's what we're asking for.
Are you encouraging your pilots to get vaccinated?
Well, we are, but we have to sit down and have some agreements in place so our pilots are comfortable with their career decision and their medicals moving forward.
Something else I saw, too, I can't confirm this yet, but I saw that 80% of Southwest Airlines pilots are ex-military.
Yep.
That's a staggering number. And it also speaks to, by the way, there's 60,000 members of the United States Air Force that are on the chopping block under the same mandate who have yet to be vaccinated. December 8th is the deadline, so there's time. But
I don't
know
coming.
If there's a willingness.
No, there's not a willingness. If you're not vaccinated by now, you don't want to get vaccinated.
There may be time, but they're not a disposition. You know, some people wait. But 60,000 U.S. Air Force, Southwest Airlines pilots, Chicago police, Seattle police, not just limited to them. There's a real moment, it seems, coming. And it may start by coming to a federal court, and that would be the dispensation of perhaps litigation, the state of Texas, with the vaccine mandate ban that Governor Abbott imposed. Making a 10th Amendment claim against Joe Biden's federal mandate on employers with more than 100 employees. The Wall Street Journal characterized the Abbott ban on vax mandates as, you know, a reflexive response, also an overreach. I don't think so. I don't think so for this reason. It's about time that the courts draw some lines. Does the 10th Amendment, is that still in force or not? Even Scott Gottlieb, FDA commissioner, says, you know, he doesn't like the vaccine mandate ban at the state level, but he also doesn't like the federal vax mandate. These should be local decisions, state and local, really, employer decisions. And actually, that was
personal
the position.
Decision, too.
Well,
Well,
yes, a personal decision, but the employer has a say in this. And so this is the position that Gary Kelly, who's the CEO of Southwest Airlines, essentially articulated, but suggested, look, our hands are tied because of the federal mandate. We like all airlines, are basically fall under the federal contractor provision in terms of that mandate. He also had something to say about this weekend and the disruption, all the cancellation of Southwest flights.
Well, yeah, again, I think that we're uniquely affected because we have so many of our flights that touch Florida. All the airlines were impacted on Friday. It was just more of an impact on us, and it just took us longer to recover. But all of our employees worked very hard through the weekend, and it's tough on our customers, but it's also tough on our people. So they did a phenomenal job. There's absolutely no issue in working with our employees. talking about the vaccine mandate, oh, yeah, I mean, there are some that have very strong views on both sides of that issue. And, you know, it's not, as I think you probably know, I've never been in favor of corporations imposing that kind of a mandate. I'm not in favor of that, never have been. But the executive order from President Biden mandates that all federal employees and then all federal contractors, which covers all the major airlines, have to have a mandate, a vaccine in place by December the 8th. So we're working through that. We're urging all of our employees to get vaccinated. If they can't, we're urging them to seek an accommodation, either for medical or religious reasons. But my goal, obviously, is that no one loses their job. The objective here, obviously, is to improve health and safety, not for people to lose their jobs. So, yes, we have some very strong views on that topic, but that's not what was at issue with Southwest over the weekend.
All right, well, I still want to go.
So it sounds like perhaps Southwest, between the Pilots Association and the front office, if you will, can reach some accord there, particularly if Southwest will be thoughtful and generous with respect to the granting of exceptions that are provided in law and increasingly in federal courts, right, for religious and medical reasons for pilots or other employees that do not want to get the vax for those reasons.
But again, the list exempt from Biden's vaccine mandates. I know I've read this before. Why? Congressional staff are exempt from the vaccine mandate. Congress, legislative branch, judicial branch, White House staff, CDC employees, FDA employees, USPS, Post Office, Postal Service, Pfizer employees, Moderna employees, and illegal aliens. They don't have to have vaccine mandates. But then you put the pressure on companies like Southwest Airlines, American Airlines, our military. It goes on and on to get vaccinated. Why?
If things were consistent, they wouldn't be arbitrary.
Oh, yeah.
Chris on the Dan Ryan, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, I just want to say that, you know, I work for a train company, large train company here in Chicago. They're thinking about mandates. It's against what I want to do. I don't believe the mandates are legal. I don't want to lose my job. I like my job. But again, you know, when being forced to it, the household I'm living into is getting pretty contentious, if at that, in regards to this mandate, because I want to keep my job. But on the other hand, it doesn't look right because, you know, a couple of people I know have heart conditions after their second shot. And I'm not saying that the vaccine has caused that, but it's kind of a strange association. And I support the police officers because they have to deal with, you know, everyday occurrences that normal human beings don't. And I just hope that this mandate is acceptable for some, but we can have the option to not get into it if we have to, if we don't want to, if we choose not to. I've already had COVID, and I'll tell you this much right now, you know, my T cells and my antibodies are right where they need to be for my doctor. And, you know, I just don't understand this mandate. It's just basically it's overreach.
Yeah. Thanks for overreach. The call, Chris.
John Cantanzera, I talked to him a few days ago, and he said, look, the ones that don't want to get vaccinated, Amy, had COVID. So they don't, you know, their natural immunity is and their antibodies are stronger than if somebody was vaccinated.
Well, this is the issue, too. It seems to me this is an issue to really zero in on. If you're unwilling to do an antibody test for those who've been infected and recovered to establish that they have as much or the same immunity as anybody who's been vaccinated, and then count those in the vaccinated camp or count those in the exempt camp, however you want to categorize them, then you're not serious about science. You're not serious about slowing the spread, protecting people's health, all of the other fortune cookie platitudes we hear from people. You're just not serious about that. Just explain to me why somebody with natural immunity should still be required to get something that they clearly don't need to achieve the end that you say you want to achieve through the vaccines. So if you will not provide relief for that category of people, then the conversation's over because you're an unserious person.
Well, and then think, you guys, these are the people, they never stopped working. Even when they were exposed to people who had COVID, they still went to work. They didn't quarantine for 14 days. they were on the front lines, and now we're going to make them sit home and deny them pay to feed their families because they won't get vaccinated? I mean, it's ludicrous.
Vince in Crete. Hey, Vince.
Hello?
Vince, you're on. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Love your show. Just want to make a point that illegal immigrants aren't required to get vaccinated. Neither are Congress or the members of their staff required to get vaccinated. And then one other tidbit is that my daughter does medical coding for a hospital, and she said that there is no medical code for people that get sick or die from the vaccination.
All right. Thanks for the call, Vince. With respect to migrants trying to enter the country illegally, the Biden administration to ease COVID-19 travel restrictions at Canada and Mexico land border crossings, Canadian and Mexican citizens will be permitted to enter for non-essential purposes for the first time in 20 months if fully vaccinated. But if you're unvaccinated, you're free to come in illegally.
Yeah. Oh, please. What a joke.
So if you're a Canadian or Mexican citizen, you can come in legally if you're vaccinated. If you're from any other country and you want to come in for any reason illegally, you don't need to be vaccinated. Okay.
Thank you for making me laugh.
Frank in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. The Democrats are now the party of unreason. But let's remember, they were the party of the slave power prior to the Civil War. They were the party of anti-civil rights, guys like Senator Theodore Bilbo and Ed Cotton Smith of South Carolina. I mean, these are the kinds of people that are in the Democratic Party. The big question now is, are they going to completely destroy our supply chain with this stuff? And is something like the Holodomor coming to our country? Are we going to have enough stuff here to be able to survive the winter with all this stuff? It is so unreasonable. It is so pathetic. And it's evil. It really is. That's my opinion on it.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Nick on the Northwest side.
Yeah, well-researched show again, as usual.
Thanks.
Listen, this mayor gets tough with the wrong people all the time. She's picking on the cops again. After the first wave of rioters came through, I predicted that it'll happen again pretty much the same way, and it did, because she talks tough on them, but they know, those type of people know it means nothing. And here's these people, the police, who are still out there risking their lives for us, taking a chance getting sick when they handle some of the people they have to deal with that we would try to stay away from, even if they're not attacking us, but just near us. So this mayor is just going to run the city down into the ground, and all they can say is, God help us all this weekend if the cops don't show up for work. Yeah, that's it.
Thanks, Nick. Rich on the north side.
Yeah, guys, you know, and I'm an ex-member of the service, and I have not yet to do it, and I'm reluctant to do it. And I don't understand, if the vaccines aren't 100%, you got to get boosters. It makes no sense. To me, it seems like they're giving you this stuff, and they don't care what the after effects are. There's no study for that. It almost seems like a population kill. And I want to know what you guys think about that. I mean, to me, it seems like your government is evil. I mean, I'm sorry. It just makes no sense.
Thanks for the call, Rich. I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say that. There's no real evidentiary support for that, the whole sort of population kill theory. But I would say that you do have a federal government that is antagonistic to the interests of a free citizen. I would say that. And, I mean, this is the most obvious manifestation of it as we've lived through the last 19 months, but it's not the only one. Antagonistic towards your interests, a government that games its citizens for its own ends, which are power.
Right, because I said so. And that's it. End of conversation.
And you've seen how all of these institutions that play such an impactful role in people's lives have behaved over the last several years on any number of issues, any number of incidents. And, you know, almost without exception, I can't think of an exception, actually, it has or should have shaken your confidence in those institutions that are so impactful in your life. And it continues because it is the aggrandizement of power at the expense of the individual's liberty. That is the consistent thread throughout all of the topics we have discussed and continue to discuss, whether it's something as parochial as the curriculum at your local school or something as global as public health or national security or equal protection before the law. Serious stuff. Paul and Marengo.
Hey, Dan, how are you doing?
Good.
Hey, I have a question. What happened to HIPAA? I worked at a hospital for 13 years, and that was sacrosanct. And, like, whether it worked for us or against us, it was the law. And now it just seems to be thrown out with, you know, everything else. But...
Well, they come over the top. Thanks for the call, Paul. And in point of fact, it'd be more interesting if they took an interest in your particular medical profile before they started mandating invasive procedures like a shot. Instead, what are they saying? Put a mask on and take a jab and shut up. No jab, no job. That's essentially the position. It'd be more thoughtful, at least, if they made an attempt to say, you know, in consultation with your doctor who understands your medical history, you know, think about this, and this is why this is should be an individual decision. And yes, employers have some say in their conditions of employment. But with respect to unions, as we're saying, well, you have collective bargaining agreements in place, and they want these matters to be negotiated if there's going to be a new condition of employment. So they have an argument to make as well, unfair, and thus the class unfair labor practice complaint that Canton Czar is prepared to file on behalf of Chicago Police as of midnight on Thursday. So, that's the best I can answer it. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Scott Smith is a Loudoun County school district dad. He's the face of those domestic terrorists attending school board meetings and petitioning their school boards, their duly elected school boards, expressing their grievances with what the school boards are doing in so many respects.
And they're domestic terrorists now.
He's a domestic terrorist. He was specifically cited in the National Association of School Boards missive to the Department of Justice, asking essentially that parents be treated as domestic terrorists, which Merrick Garland, the attorney general, is happy to oblige. This was Scott Smith in June at a Loudoun County School Board meeting being arrested.
He's trying to disrupt things.
You heard some of that yelling in the background as he was being tackled by police officers. Something about a girl was raped?
Yeah, in the bathroom.
Luke Rosiak is a reporter for the Daily Wire, and he recently interviewed Scott Smith for context on what happened. You know, his mugshot went viral. You know, he's got a bloody lip from being tackled by the cops and so on and so forth. He's the obstreperous, white Trump supporter who's a domestic terrorist, who's threatening school board members, who's out of control.
Yeah, he needs to be stopped now. He's a threat to society.
And so why was he so upset at that school board meeting, Scott Smith? Luke Rosiak was on with Tucker Carlson last night to summarize his interview and report on the matter.
Yes, this story is one of the most disturbing I've ever worked on. It raises the possibility that the Loudoun County Public Schools covered up the rape of a 14-year-old girl at the hands of a boy wearing a skirt in order to pass a school policy that Democrats were adamant about passing. And as a result of concealing that, a second girl was raped last week. And to prevent all of this from coming out, potentially, they arrested the father of the victim, tried to put him in jail, And he's now the face of domestic terrorism listed by listed individually by the National School Boards Association, all for coming to that meeting. He didn't come to that meeting because he's a bigot. A lot of people thought they knew that guy. They trotted out his picture, his embarrassing picture with his belly hanging out and his bloody face. They all thought they knew him. They knew nothing about him. This was a caring father who was involved because of something very personal that happened to his daughter. And if they would have shut up and listened to him for 30 seconds, they would have been heartbroken. Instead, they demeaned him, they arrested him, and they tried to put him in jail.
Where's the alleged rapist in all this? You know, the actual bad guy?
It's under investigation, according to local police. But they did confirm that the investigation is of a sexual assault. The story, two girls allegedly sexually assaulted in school 4 months apart by the same person. So far, the only person to be convicted of a crime is Scott Smith, who got a 10-day suspended sentence. School policy passed following what appeared to be false statements from the superintendent, a guy named Scott Ziegler. You've heard from him before on this show, just recently in a report by Cheryl Atkinson, where he denied that critical race theory was being taught in the Loudoun County school system, and then went on, and he has no idea what it is, and then went on to define what it isn't. The trans policy that was passed, this incident running essentially concurrent with the discussion about the trans policy in Loudoun County schools, allowing kids to use whatever bathroom they feel like based on whatever gender they feel like in the moment.
Yeah, because their daughter was raped, allegedly, by a boy wearing a skirt.
That's the allegation. And if that had seen the light of day during the debate over that policy, perhaps there would have been a different attitude by and more parents participating to express their different attitude. So it seems that school officials covered up what happened to Scott Smith's daughter, allegedly, so they could force through this policy.
I mean, it's every parent's biggest nightmare. This is what we are, you know, from the beginning, from the get-go, saying this will give boys an advantage to take advantage of young women in washrooms.
Loudoun County parents showed up to the school board meeting last night to call for Superintendent Ziegler's resignation.
When is Dr. Ziegler and this board going to be held accountable? What did you think was going to happen when you pushed porn into the classrooms and into the libraries and let boys into the girls' bathrooms?
There's something seriously wrong with a system that prioritizes reporting a rape internally to the superintendent so that they can control the narrative instead of calling the police.
Hiding evidence from every parent in LCPS about a heinous sexual assault of a student that occurred in a bathroom so you could pass radical policy 8040 is more important to you than protecting the dignity and safety of our children against the likelihood of a repeat occurrence.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
I can't help but think of that Chicago Tribune report from a couple of years ago detailing the rampant sexual abuse of students by adults in the Chicago public school system, teachers and staff members. Over the course they examined, over the course of about 6 years, more than 500 cases that the city's legal department determined or described as, you know, plausible, like legitimate, like there was a basis for the allegation. And how little response that got.
No pushback.
So
it was released during the summertime and people at their summer homes in Michigan and Wisconsin.
For all those leftists, these self-loathing Catholics, these anti-Christian bigots who like to heap scorn on the Catholic Church and decry the Catholic Church or institutions they don't like when there's a sexual abuse scandal. And by the way, the scorn and the criticism of the Catholic Church was completely warranted. Where are they now? Where are they when the same criminal activity is alleged or is confirmed to have occurred in one of their crown jewel systems, school systems in particular, that we pour billions and billions of dollars into, like CPS, or that's in the case of Loudoun County, the crown jewel of the wealthiest community in America. Crown jewel? Yeah.
And they better change their transgender policy because they have a predator still going to school there. I would never be in that bathroom with that person, and I just, it's sickening. I would yank my kid out of that school.
Well, also, there's an obvious question to be asked. So why did that kid go to another school? Did you do a Dance of the Lemons? Did you do what the Catholic Church did and move
a predator
sexual abuser to another school and not inform the parents at that other school either? Did that school, that student decide to transfer after this came to light in the school he was at? And was that made public or even, you know, made private? Were parents and students informed?
And is he still wearing skirts at his new school and being allowed to use a girls' washroom?
Yeah, a lot of questions there. So we'll have to follow the investigation and see what police determine.
I mean, the left is so, you know, women's rights and a feminist movement. Now's the time to protect your daughters and the young ladies that are coming up to become women.
There's other domestic terrorists afoot, too, in Virginia. Fairfax County, which is another area that's become a flashpoint for all of this. Good profile on a gentleman named Harry Jackson, who is the president of the Parent Teacher Association, Fairfax County School District, profiled by Bill McGurn in the Wall Street Journal. Harry Jackson is an Annapolis grad. He's a former Navy intelligence officer. He's also black. And he has gotten engaged with Fairfax County, the school district, and the school board because of just how dismissive they are of what people like Harry Jackson have to say about whatever it is they decide to do. It's really remarkable. By the way, Fairfax County, mm-hmm. That's a county that Biden won by 42 points.
Wow.
So are those Fairfax County domestic terrorists Trump voters? No. They're not Trump voters. In point of fact, the white ethnic Trump voter with only a high school education. This is the caricature of Trump voters by the left, of course. And no, Jackson is an Annapolis grad. He's a black man. Thomas Jefferson School, where he's got a kid, is ranked, according to some rankings, the number one high school in the country. They have a competitive entrance exam with a formula designed to increase the number of black, Latino, and white students at the expense of Asian American students. And Mr. Jackson says of that black man, in the name of equity, they established inequity, and it was clearly directed at the Asian community. The Parent Teacher Association includes two Chinese Americans and one Indian American. Our coalition destroys their narrative, says Jackson. Most of our members are Democrats, and many are people of color. And he tried to speak at a recent school board meeting about the same issue you heard at the Loudoun County board meeting, pornography in the library. They ran out of time before Mr. Jackson was allowed to speak. A student who did speak that evening defended the contested material, saying, "There's nothing that is inappropriate unless you go looking for it." Mr. Jackson, because he's a smart guy and he listens to what actually people say and attaches meaning to what they say, "I'm glad to see we agree there's pornographic material in the library. All you have to do is look for it." That's happening in Fairfax County. You heard Loudoun County. So that dad who was the face of domestic terrorists at school board meetings was a dad who was understandably irate that his daughter was allegedly sexually assaulted. His 15-year-old daughter was allegedly sexually assaulted in a bathroom.
And forcible sodomy, one count of anal sodomy, one count of forcible fellatio.
At the high school. Ugh. What would you have done as a mom or dad if your daughter had told you that happened to her? Would you have had some motivation to go address your school board, your superintendent, your principal, the teachers, everybody that had any ties to what allegedly occurred? Would you be a little exercised about that? What does it take?
This is sickening.
What does it take? I don't know what it takes. I don't know what it takes. We're going to find out in Virginia if this is what it takes. Because if Loudoun County and Fairfax County go south or even are close for Terry McAuliffe, then Terry McAuliffe is out. he will not be the next Democrat socialist governor of Virginia.
And President Obama is campaigning with him today.
And that will send shockwaves through the political system, which would be encouraging. I mean, what does it take in these communities to demand accountability from the people you elected, or to remove people who will not be accountable? What does it take for people to get involved? I mean, do you have to have girls being sexually assaulted, as Amy just described in the most graphic terms?
Sickening.
What the hell?
She's never going to be the same.
So maybe put that to all of the pee hats in your suburban community. And, of course, all of the out and proud Marxists in urban centers like Chicago.
And they don't even have any record of the assault occurring in the restroom. That's what Ziegler kept claiming. Well, there is a police report.
There's a police investigation.
And a sheriff's investigation, yes.
Kevin in Libertyville.
Protect the transgender.
Morning, guys. Good morning, guys. Dan, I think you could get rid of the word alleged in front of sexual assault. She was sexually assaulted. Her father, I remember reading, stated one of the best things he did was he had his daughter go and have a rape kit done and perform. And she was sexually assaulted.
So you
can remove the word alleged. I mean, the perpetrator may be alleged, but she was sexually assaulted. The other very disturbing aspect of this entire scenario is that the police, for no good reason, started to arrest this guy because he pulled his arm away. Most police won't do that. Heck, you can do all sorts of crimes these days right in front of the cops and not get arrested. So it's just very disturbing on so many different levels, but she definitely was sexually assaulted.
All right, thanks for the call, Kevin. Clay in Wheeling.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You guys should ask me for tomorrow's Powerball numbers, because I can apparently predict the future. We all knew this was going to happen. I knew this was going to happen. We knew this was going to happen. And now we're outraged because we let it happen. Because we let it happen. These kinds of programs need to be combated right out of the gate. And it's the fault of these parents for letting this slip through the system and letting it go. We knew this was going to happen. And you know what? That kid, it should be treated like the old days, like in the 1950s and 1940s. Something happens like that to somebody's daughter, you get five guys, you go over to that guy's house,
beat
the crap out of that kid. So the only thing he understands is black and blue.
Oh.
And then you find that superintendent next for allowing that crap to go through.
Oh, they want him out.
They came for your sons, and now they're coming for your daughters. It's war now. I hope you people understand that. They are coming for you. Thanks
for the
rip
call,
that
Clay.
Skirt off them. Oh, my God.
Well, I don't want to advocate going, you know, Mystic River on people because you can make a mistake. I say again, to Clay's point, those sentimental barbarians, and, you know, I use the term a lot. It's redundant, but it's for emphasis because most people don't understand sentimentality. Sentimentality is barbarism. That's what sentimentality breeds, what's happening in Loudoun County and Fairfax County and so many other places all over Chicagoland. This is what sentimentality breeds, barbarism. So sentimentalists are barbarians. So you either want decide that you want to live in a civilized community, or you don't. But there's no in-between. Yeah. None. Brian in Oak Forest.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Just real quick, my school board, District 146, Orland-Tinley, Oak Forest, on Monday there was four people in attendance, and there was nine people watching online. So I don't know what we're supposed to do. Like I've been telling you, I've been trying to get parents on board, but nobody seems to care, so... That's all I got. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call, Brian. I mean, you know, I appreciate Brian trying to put in the fight. That's all you can do. Put in the fight where you can. That's all you can do. You're putting in the fight for your kid and for your community. And there's something valuable in that. Jeff in Cal City. Hey, Jeff.
Jeff.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I just want to know why isn't anyone outing the parents of this child? The parents that are speaking up at school board meetings are going through their histories and their backgrounds with a fine-tooth comb. The FBI has hit lists of all these people that are showing up to speak out at the school board meeting. Why don't reporters go to the house of this child and ask the parents what the hell is going on and what are you doing about your kid? Why don't they out the parents? Why don't they check the parents out of this kid?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Jeff. Joe on 294.
Yes, you're right, Dan. It is do what you can in your community. But overall, it's the whole country needs to do what they can do. And, now's the time. I mean, whether it's from, the Biden administration with the jab or Lightfoot with the police, hopefully that doesn't open Lightfoot's Pandora's box. But anyway, needless to say, if people all across the country, got together and, do what they could do. But these elected officials, they need to be held accountable, especially in Fairfax for what incidents happened there.
Yeah, Loudoun. But, yeah, thanks for the call, Joe. Loudoun and Fairfax. And, by the way, I mean, the Harry Jackson, that former naval officer, mm-hmm. He wears a T-shirt that says domestic terrorist to the Fairfax School Board meetings. I like the embrace of it and using that as a rallying cry for parents. It should be happening outside of Fairfax and Loudoun and all over the country, including in Chicagoland. James Sensenbrenner, who was a Wisconsin rep for 40 years and the principal author of the Patriot Act, he has an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal saying that just essentially says the Patriot Act was never intended to be used for parents at school board meetings. Obviously, it's being used as a tool, or at least the threat of a tool, for political repression. He writes, the Patriot Act was enacted into law following the 9/11 attacks. Central purpose was to prevent additional forced attacks on American soil, foreign terrorist attacks on American soil, by enhancing the collection and sharing of foreign intelligence information, restricting terrorist financing, and enhancing border security. It has nothing to do with anything related to protesting curriculum or anything to COVID policy, anything related to the machinations of a local school district, obviously. But at least you have the principal author weighing in, too, whatever you think about the Patriot Act.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. All right, proud Marist grad, South and Southwest Siders. Marist High School, Mount Greenwood. Catholic school. Another one that is generally lost. Homecoming dance over the weekend. Bit of a controversy.
Yeah, I've heard.
The DJ at the dance played some Spanish language songs.
Well, it was the Spanish version of the line dance from Billy Ray Cyrus, Achy Breaky Heart.
And we're Thank you for being so specific.
Well, that's the
that
song.
Matters.
Well, yeah. It might matter, Dan. It's just the facts. That's the, they have an English version of Billy Ray Cyrus song, and that. It's a line dance that people were doing.
Okay. Playing some Spanish language songs like Payaso de Rodeo. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is that the Billy Ray Cyrus Spanish version of the line song?
We're trying to find it right now, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure. Just play Despacito. That's close enough. I like that song. And it turns out that the Marist students attending the homecoming dance liked some of the Spanish language songs and didn't like some of the other Spanish language songs. And this has created quite a ruckus because one Marist high school girl was offended, like that was an affront to Spanish-speaking people the world over. And so they organized a little student protest, and I mean little, just like at Bennett. You know, five people's enough if it's the right five people. Or, the identitarian score is right among the five people. And they did like a little walk out. And of course, the Chicago Press Corps was dutifully there to record all of their sentimentality.
There was this money.
Students at Marist High School in Mount Greenwood were looking forward to making great memories at their homecoming dance. But for some, it turns into a nightmare after their classmates took a knee when the music switched to Spanish.
For them to be kneeling, which represents racial inequality and racial injustice, for them to be doing that for a song that's just not in their language was so disappointing to see. And some of these people who I saw kneeling, I considered friends.
These students say some of their classmates also made offensive comments about Mexicans during the Saturday night dance.
What I witnessed at the dance was completely disrespectful.
I'm also disappointed in some of the teachers that were there supervising because they didn't do anything in that moment.
A couple more students.
I just want them to have a better understanding and open their hearts for us the way we respect their cultures.
I think what we want is a formal apology from these students and for them to be educated on why this was wrong.
I am heartbroken because I wanted to have my best 4 years here in high school, and I didn't get it. Oh.
Do you want to tell them what really happened, Dan?
Some questions before we even get to the results of the Marist High School investigation into the incident. The girl who said kneeling is a sign of racial inequality, what does that even mean? So is it a sign of racial inequality when people kneel during the anthem? Are you being bigoted towards people not kneeling? I don't even know what that means. This is an indictment of the education at Marist, apparently. In addition to that, here's a question that young lady might want to reflect upon.
What?
Some of her friends were kneeling. Oh. So your friends were secret racists all this time through high school, and you just found out when they kneeled for a Spanish song they didn't want to dance to?
Yeah, if you look at the video, a number of Hispanic kids were kneeling because the investigation found out that kneeling during a song is a common practice for students to tell the DJ to change the song that is being played. So they didn't kneel just in that song. They kneeled in other songs as well. And all the chaperones that were there said, yeah, they kneeled a number of times. Not just for that song.
Yeah. Marist issued this statement yesterday. Students showed displeasure of the songs by kneeling, crouching down, sitting multiple times throughout the dance. Kneeling was not isolated to the one Spanish song that was shown in a video that's been distributed. Marist High School contacted the DJ company, MG Sound, to obtain a full playlist from the dance. MG Sound informed us that it's common for students to gesture in the manner that was displayed on Saturday night as a way of requesting the DJ change the songs being played. The playlist shows there were three or four Spanish language songs. Students seen the video kneeling to one song were also seen dancing during other Spanish language songs. Uh-huh. So is that it? No, that's not it. Did Marist handle that right? No, not yet, because you haven't heard the rest. Although these are the facts, this is from Marist, we recognize there are still students at Marist who viewed this video or who were at the homecoming dance that were hurt by these actions. Marist is a family, and when one of us hurts, we all hurt. The fact that there were students who left the homecoming dance hurt by what they witnessed shows us that there is work to do. Here are the steps.
Oh boy.
We've taken to address the culture of inclusion at our school. In July of this year, Marist hired a DIE director.
What's that?
Diversity, Inclusion, Equity.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
One of the many purposes of this role is to create opportunity for faculty, staff, and students to engage in meaningful cultural dialogue, right? Because that can't happen without a director of DIE. In September, we started the program We Are One, which gives faculty and staff the opportunity to gather and discuss cultural topics, like which Spanish language songs you like or don't like. That's my parenthetical remark. We are starting our third session this week. Topics include building a cultural community, implicit and unconscious bias, and unpacking your own biases. Weekly, our teacher teams have been meeting to discuss professional development articles provided by the director of DIE regarding building a cultural community in the classroom. Student dialogue on similar cultural topics is set to begin early November.
Mm-hmm. 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
This is no different than Andrew Mayorkas, the DHS Homeland Security Secretary, saying, we are doing an investigation into the horse-drawn Border Patrol because of what some people thought they saw, and that hurt them, essentially.
Yeah, we're doing this because of feelings.
We know what the facts are, but some people were hurt by a misinterpretation of the facts, and so we're going to perform this investigation, or in the case of Maris, we're going to, we already have, and we're going to continue to indulge leftist, race-based indoctrination through staff and programming. We're going to, we're here not in service of the truth. We're here in service of feelings, no matter how unfounded those feelings are. So when a school, particularly a Catholic school, but any school, stops caring about the truth, then it stops being a place that's educating children. And so Marist now joins the pantheon of Catholic schools no longer interested in the truth, interested in indulging feelings only. And it's no, it, and it should renounce its affiliation with the Catholic Church, just like Bennett should, just like Loyola Academy should, and announce its affiliation with the 1619 Project and Black Lives Matter, because that's who they serve. Cultural Marxists. Announce your school, just be honest, you know, truth in advertising. We are a private secular school that's affiliated with Marxist organizations and a Marxist interpretation of American history. That's what you can expect your child to be weaned on if you send them to Marist or Bennett or Loyola or obviously just about all the public school systems. Isn't that, wouldn't that be honest? Or do you think Marist handled this right? They properly balance the competing interests. There's no competing interest. There's what's true and there's what isn't. And you think indulging these daffy, undereducated teenage girls.
Teenage girls. We're talking about dramatic teenage girls. You just empowered them with a false sense of empowerment.
And that and the teenage girls who apparently are their parents, at least they have the same maturation level. You think indulging them serves some purpose? That advances the flag for racial harmony, brings us together as a family. Everybody's a family.
If one hurts.
As long as the truth is a stranger, everybody can be a family, in the Marxist sense. Right.
Well, she kept saying, and then, you know, they're making derogatory comments about Mexicans. Well, what? What did they say? And no reporter asked that at that, you know, press conference where you had just as many press as you did kids.
And, of course, you get the sensationalized network affiliate news coverage. The homecoming dance turned into a nightmare.
A nightmare is if there's a mass shooting. That's not a nightmare, folks. Get it together.
Tom in Blue Island.
Check yourselves.
Well, good morning, Dan and Amy. And I was wondering eventually when you would get to my high school. 35 years ago, parents in Mount Greenwood, which is a lot wealthier now than it was then, if you didn't send your kid to Marist or Brother Rice, they had to go to Morgan Park, which Morgan Park has a reputation today it doesn't deserve. 35 years ago, it had a reputation it did deserve. Marist was all boys. Marist was called the Redskins. And I believe, Dan, you mentioned Bennett one time, and you mentioned their nickname, which I think must have been changed.
No, it's the Red Wings. So they've gone. It's a bird.
It still is. It was then. Well, Marist used to, it's the Red Hawks now.
Yeah.
Used to be the Redskins, and a lot of us alumni refused to support the school after they did that. It's sad what's happened to Marist. A lot of us alumni don't even participate in it anymore. But the key was it was all boys. In the first class I had at Marist, a brother knocked me upside the head for speaking out of line, and I still say to this day it changed my life. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Catholic Church has become. But what do you expect when you have an abortionist that visits the Pope over the weekend, Dan?
Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it. I mean, nobody's wrong, even when they're wrong.
Right.
Because I feel like I'm right. And the role of adults, particularly teachers and administrators, is to say, I'm sorry, young lady, but you got this wrong. What mm-hmm. you thought happened didn't happen.
Didn't happen. And she knew, they knew, and her name's Elizabeth, well, it doesn't matter what her name is, but they knew that people kneeled during other songs. And they were not, they were just other bands that were playing, and the song, the kids didn't like the song. That's what you do, you kneel. Or you walk off the dance floor. Or you approach the DJ and say, hey, change the song. They did. There were so many outdoor homecoming dances this weekend, and people do that all the time.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know there was an outdoor one at Fenwick because of...
for an hour and a half.
Because of, you know, the COVID, but it was an indoor fundraiser at Drury Lane, no masks for the alumni.
Yeah.
Fenwick, another school that should just renounce its affiliation with Catholicism. We're a private secular school affiliated with the Marxist school of thought. Just be honest. You know, if you can't be honest with your students, at least be honest to the general public. And since you're so proud of who you are and what you've become, you should be trumpeting it from the rooftops. Mm-hmm. You should be running paid advertising campaigns to celebrate your DIE directors and your antipathy for the truth. And your anything goes, we indulge feelings and cure the hurt as the mission objective of the school. Carlos in Hoffman States.
Morning, everybody. Check this out. I just did a couple of homecoming dances, and I haven't seen the kneeling, but I can tell you these kids are brutally honest, and when you play something they don't like, they're going to let you know right
yep.
away.
Yep. All well, right. What do they do? Do they walk off the dance floor, or what do they say to you?
Did they say, let's go, Carlos? Let's go, Brandon? Or
no,
what do they say?
No. They will chant, change the song. They will yell profanities. Mm-hmm. I mean, they will line up. I mean, you can hear it, especially when you're DJing a homecoming with 1,000 kids.
Uh-huh.
That they will let you know.
Carlos, so, can I give you a pro tip on your DJing, on your playlist selection? Can I give you a pro tip?
Yeah, you can try.
Yeah, all right. It's. Johnny Cash.
Oh, no.
I'm not done. Johnny, it's got to be, you know, it's got to be broad. Johnny Cash, ZZ Top.
Oh.
Journey.
Maybe.
A little Billy Squire for the headbangers. They're still around. Do they have headbangers in high schools? I don't know anymore. Little Chris Isaak for the, you know, the slow dancing songs. Leave room for the Holy Spirit. I know. What do you think so far?
No.
You're liking what I'm laying
Dan,
down?
Dan.
Horrible.
Dan, you just described the lamest homecoming
game. I mean, ever. This is why he didn't go to homecoming or
I've never went to I've never
oh,
gone
wait,
to
wait, wait, wait.
I've
But
never
I will tell you this. I will tell you this. I will tell you this. Journey was a huge hit, yeah. And ABBA Dancing Queen for some reason.
What about
that's
the outfield?
Back.
Those two.
No, you need Kanye, Drake, all that, you know?
No.
Exactly.
Oh, people love that. Kids love that. Teo Cruz.
They want the latest and greatest, and they don't want the latest and greatest from like 2 weeks ago. They want it, like what's hot. Like,
all right.
Well, Harry Styles, trophies. Yeah, I mean, all right. It goes on and on.
Well, that's why you're a DJ, and I've never gone to a dance, Carlos. All right. Thanks for the call.
Main
Appreciate
course.
It.
I'm just looking at my playlist here. For
so
my kids.
It seems like Carlos, you know, who DJs these huge events, these homecoming dances and stuff that you were attending to, Amy,
mm-hmm.
the North American record setter for attending homecoming and proms.
Yep, and I went to all four homecoming dances, turnabout, all four. Yes, go on, sir. Yes.
Seems like he sort of understands what happened at Marist versus what those girls say happened at Marist.
Yeah.
Matt in Mount Greenwood. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Dan. Good morning.
Morning.
You know, it's unfortunate what's happened with Marist High School overall. It is completely woke. And, you know, four girls, the administrators of Marist High School several years ago went after these girls for private posts they did on their social media accounts. And those girls were all expelled from the school and literally ruined the college careers of a couple of them. Very selective with what they do, and I understand this is innocent, you know, but it's blown up, and shame on Marist for cowtown to the woke. It just makes me sick.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, we were talking about music for homecoming dances.
Yeah.
At the end of last hour. And it got my propeller spinning.
Oh, boy.
I think I've got the perfect song for all Chicago Public School dances for the rest of the year.
Yeah, because there's homecomings this weekend and the next weekend. So, what do you got?
Perfect. Oh, my timing couldn't be better. All right, take a listen. This is White Buffalo.
Come join the murder. Come fly with Black. Well, he'll give you freedom from the human trap. Come join the murder. Soar on my wings. You'll touch the hand of God, and he'll make you king. He'll make you king.
How about that bridge? What do you think? Come join the murder for homecoming dances at CPS schools.
Touch the God and you will become king.
I think you're missing the top line.
I know the top line.
Come join the murder.
Come join the murder. Yeah.
Also, it's sort of a recruitment song for joining a motorcycle gang. It's from Sins of Anarchy. What do you think?
Maybe. No, I think that's not going to
Yeah, happen. I like it.
I think the kiddies will take a knee or walk off or whatever they do or approach the DJ and demand better. Because they're all so entitled these days.
Yeah, the more...
they can't suffer through one song they don't like. Give me a break. Get over it.
Yeah, the more conflicted, dark high school students like myself will appreciate that, though. So I'm trying to cater to my audience.
Okay.
All right, we have to move on from homecoming dance songs, as robust a topic as that is, and get to our friend Cheryl Atkison. She's on the road again doing another very interesting report. She took out to Lancaster County in Pennsylvania. That's Amish country. I hope the Amish texter is listening.
Yes.
There's three things that the Amish don't like and three reasons why I'm considering converting to being a Mennonite.
And during the COVID-19 outbreak, they became subjects in a massive social and medical experiment.
So it's safe to say there was a whole different approach here in this community when coronavirus broke out.
Absolutely.
Than many other places.
Absolutely.
Calvin Lapp is Amish Mennonite.
There's three things the Amish don't like, and that's government. They won't get involved in government. They don't like the public education system. They won't send their children to education, and they also don't like the health system. They rip us off. Those are three things that we feel like we're fighting against all the time. Well, those three things are all part of what COVID is.
Okay, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Who wants to change their name to Zachariah, grow a beard, wear a straw hat, move out to Lancaster County, Pennsylvania? During the lockdown, what happened last year? What did the Amish do? Well, when we didn't know very much, they locked down briefly too, when people were trying to find out what was actually happening, what the threat was, and how best to respond. But that was a brief lockdown, and then they returned to everyday Amish life. Importantly, where that return began.
When they take communion, they dump their wine into a cup, and they take turns to drink out of that cup. So you go the whole way down the line, and everybody drinks out of that cup. So if one person has coronavirus, the rest of the church is going to get coronavirus. First time they went back to church, everybody got coronavirus.
Lapp says they weren't denying coronavirus. They were facing it head on.
It's a worse thing to quit working than dying. But to shut down and say that we can't go to church, we can't get together with family, we can't see our old people in the hospital, we got to quit working, you're working, it's going completely against everything that we believe. And you're changing our culture completely to try to act like they wanted us to act the last year. And we're not going to do it.
It's interesting because what that Amish gentleman described was American culture. Yeah. Used to be. You're going against everything we believe. Church, family, work. And we weren't going to do that. Well, unfortunately, the Amish are an outlier in this country right now.
Then last March, remarkable news. The Lancaster County Amish were reported to be the first community to achieve herd immunity, meaning a large part of the population had been infected with COVID-19 and become immune.
So family, a church, work, and there's no evidence to suggest that the incidence of infection or the hospitalization rate or death rate was any higher in the Amish community, that tight-knit community in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, than anywhere else. That's what we know per Cheryl Atkinson's reporting and talking to, you heard her talking in a previous clip to an academic that studied the community. As far as work?
We have this joke, when everybody else stopped, started walking, we started running. We made more money in the last year than we ever did. It was our best year ever.
Good and, for them.
Yeah, and look, I don't, you know, I'm not particularly handy, so I don't know about the farming or the butter churning or the furniture making. So I don't know how I'll fit in the Amish community on the work piece. Maybe I can be the Amish community's official scrivener or something. But in terms of that lesson, I don't. It's just so simple. It's just so simple. I'd say it again. Family, church, and work. You were going to change our culture. You're changing our culture, and we're not going to do that. And George and Moni, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
They're alive to talk about it.
Hey, can we run that guy for the Republican nominee for president this next time?
You won't have to worry about him being on Twitter, that's for sure. Thanks for the call, hey, George. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But what about that? I mean, where are people? I know it's always the mandate du jour that is central. But what about pulling back and thinking more broadly about where we're at? I mean, I know there's a lot of people that have essentially put COVID in the rearview mirror and are fortunate enough, like me, to be able to do that personally, even though we discuss this a lot because a lot of people haven't been able to. With kids in school and mm-hmm. with employer requirements. And
these things called life.
Living in Chicago, yeah, and so on.
Remember
so forth.
That? Oh, wait, I have a life here.
But what about pulling back and just saying, where do you think you are as compared to where you were in March of 2020 on family, work, family, faith, and work? Where do you think you are? Same place? Do you think you're getting back to the same place? Are you despondent that you worry you may never be able to get back to that?
Well, I'm grateful.
March of 2020 place.
Yeah, I'm grateful that we can come to work. I mean, we had to get papers. Think about how crazy that was. We had to get papers and carry them with us in our car to show that we're essential workers in case we got stopped by police.
Yeah,
that's during that first lockdown.
Yeah,
but that's how insane it was. And, and then I chose to, be gone for 3 months because I was a COVID freak.
You were like Dusty Baker. You were wearing latex gloves and
I was. I had a Tyvek suit
welder shields.
I bought. Yep.
Yeah.
Welder shields with mask. I mean, I was crazy. I'd be at WLS. I'd be a code red bracelet, meaning don't even look at me. and now I'm green because I had to go somewhere where I had normal government. And that was Utah at the time. And they handled everything so differently. And their cases are still good, the part of Utah that I was in. So, and I'm thankful that the company let me do this, but I would be, if I couldn't come into this station, like a lot of the reporters out there in Chicago, I'd be losing my mind. So work has been great. Family's been really trying. And faith has been very trying. I mean, my pastor called me and said, people in the parish don't like,
don't like you.
Well, I know they don't like me, but they don't, they don't understand me, Dan.
Yes,
that's right. There's
of
a
course,
difference. They don't
it's
hate
nothing,
me.
It's nothing but love at the United Church of Black Lives Matter.
Yes,
right.
And hate has no home here, written in Arabic and everything else. So signs are everywhere,
except for Amy.
But he called me to say your mask is making people feel uncomfortable. And they said, if you come back to church, you have to wear the medical mask.
Because your mask says, let's go Brandon on it?
No, it says, my governor's an idiot. It was not a medical mask, and that's why they wanted me to wear a medical mask.
Of course.
Even though I'm 1,000 feet away from everybody, because nobody was at church back then.
Let me layer in something else, too, to if I could build on the Amish, pun intended. So family, faith, and work, and community, you know, in fellowship with other people. You don't want to be atomized either, and I think we're increasingly atomized because, you know, you're doing what you can, and then you run into new barriers, these artificial barriers that have been erected by these COVIDians. Mm-hmm. Tyler Cohen writes about this, too. I'm increasingly disturbed by what I call mask apartheid. If you've attended a conference or public event recently, you may have noticed it, or a restaurant. The wealthier attendees are not usually wearing masks, but the poorer servers and staff almost always are.
Oh, yeah.
Even if the attendees are wearing masks at the beginning, the masks come off once they start whining and dining, and they usually don't go back on. Isn't that a sign that mask wearing is no longer essential? At the very least, it sends a mixed message. If you want to be comfortable eating and drinking with your peers, it's okay to take off your mask, but it's not okay if you want to be comfortable serving food, carrying heavy trays, and describing the dessert menu. What about that? The mask apartheid. Now, not wearing a mask is a sign of privilege, to borrow a favorite word of the left, right?
That's so true. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. And then with those people that, you know, are wined and dined, then they get up to go to the bathroom. They don't put their mask on to go to the bathroom because they already have their mask off and they forget about it.
Yeah, so do you think
it's not essential to them?
Do you think that's stratification? Do you think that builds community? Is that bringing us together? Steve on the Northwest Side.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Listen, I know you probably made the comment about the Mennonites in jest, that you're going to become a Mennonite, but I got to tell you,
yeah,
we just came back from Shoshone, Indiana. We go out there every year, and there's something to be said for that peaceful, serene lifestyle. There's no hatred. There's no none of these anarchists, communists, Democrats. Well, I repeat myself, of course, but I'll tell you, I like it, that lifestyle so much, I'm actually trying to convince my devout Catholic wife to consider moving out there and getting away from this complete cesspool called Chicago. And never looking back. It's something to be said. There's a guy on YouTube, if you're interested, his name is Peter Santanello, and he does videos, and he's toured various Amish communities throughout the country, and it's pretty much an eye-opener. If you don't know that much about the Amish, I would suggest taking a look at that guy. He's really good, really good videos.
So you want to join an Amish community or become a Mennonite?
Well, I think he'd just, you know, be at least be close to that lifestyle.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But I don't know if he's trying to get his wife to convert. But, you know, I was scarred about the Amish after watching Children of the Corn as a child.
Yeah, that didn't really help the
cause. But I'm starting to, you know, I'm starting to get over that and recognize that's not exactly accurate.
Did you watch Kingpin?
Yes, right. Yes, exactly. Another one. But I think he's right about an appreciation for that lifestyle and that community. That's the other piece of it, which is implicit when you talk about the Amish community. But that's why I wanted to add it explicitly, thinking about community. I mean, when you don't really go out anymore and you're so limited in the things you can do, and even when you do the things that you're allowed to do, you're limited in the way that you do them, sporting events and going to events and entertainment venues and so forth, you know, and the way that happens, like Tyler Cohen is talking about with the stratification on masks, the diners don't have to wear them, but the staff does. Oh, we're just trying to make our diners feel comfortable. Well, I want your staff to feel comfortable too.
I never stopped being a community person. I always found gyms. Always, you know, never stopped coaching.
So what's actually happening, children? Though? What's happening? Well, you did stop coaching because you had games and seasons suspended for
periods
of time.
Well, but I'm saying we still did some underground things that shall remain underground. I mean, there's an underground hair salon, nails, eyelashes. We had this whole network
in San Francisco
filling.
Where Nancy Pelosi goes.
No, it was all over Chicago, even bars. There were speakeasies. It was crazy. But there's, you know, I'm just saying, yes, we did have seasons canceled, and that was awful.
Yeah. But obviously, if you have to go underground, as you say, to experience community, then, you know, how much damage is being done to community?
Well,
Dave in Ravenswood.
Well, I think very much the Amish embracing it and saying, you know, the point you made early on of let's not hide from it, let's embrace it and tackle it, and they were the quickest to get herd immunity. You know, these are messages and these are sensible approaches that we didn't have because COVID hit during an election year. And there is no more journalism, there's only activism. And I hope the Trump Library one day, wherever it's built, is just filled with all the examples of how journalism was used to cause fear, manipulate the vote, to teach people that Turret just how crazy things can get during an election year. I'd really love to have an alternate universe where we could see how we would have handled COVID if the conditions would have been different. You know what I mean?
Thanks for the call, Dave.
COVID
could
be
point.
A wing in our cancel culture museum that we're going to create.
No question. No question. That's a good point. You know, and the thing about we don't have journalism, we have activism. But agitprop like the vaccine wanes over time. And I note the treatment that the Fauci National Geographic documentary is getting. Rotten Tomatoes, the critic score, 91%. Uh-huh. The audience score, 2%.
Yeah, you tweeted that out. That was good.
The YouTube, if you go look at the trailer on YouTube, there's like over 100,000 thumbs down and like 7,000 or so thumbs up. Pretty big disparity between what cultural elites are attempting to get you to believe versus what people are actually believing.
Fauci has made millions off of this pandemic. He got an award, remember, from some group in Israel. He's been on Vanity Fair. He throws out the first pitch at baseball games. He never wants COVID to end. He loves this.
Annette in McHenry. Hi, Annette.
Annette.
Hi, good morning. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Good morning, Amy and Dan. I just wanted to agree with you, Dan, on your comments regarding masked and unmasked, whether you're in a restaurant or a store or anything like that. I don't mask anywhere but places where I absolutely, absolutely have to. And that's like work. And you walk in and everybody else is masked, the employees, and my assumption is they do it for fear of the mandates and whatever repercussions may occur. And then I was just thinking this morning that I wonder how history will judge this period of time in this country regarding all the stuff that's going on. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. On
I mean,
yeah.
Dan, I thought of you yesterday because I almost started crying because I found out today, starting today, we don't have to wear masks at yoga if you're in Cook County. But not in Chicago, you still have to. But if you do yoga, you don't have to wear masks starting today. And that I was celebrating that, and that is so pathetic and sad.
Small victories, I suppose. That stratification I was referring to on masks, that stratification applies to those who can work from home and those who can't. Absolutely. Absolutely, it does. I mean, it was most pronounced during the lockdown, but it still applies. You're right. Mary Kay in Western Springs.
Hi, you guys. I don't know if you care, Dan, but I was a little sorry the Sox couldn't make a comeback, but it didn't look like they could.
Not even a cane could help them.
It's a problem.
No, I know.
It's a problem when your starters can't get to the fifth inning. But here's something. Lucas Giolito and some of those other nitwits on that team, my beloved White Sox, maybe they could focus on preparing to throw strikes in the playoffs in the offseason rather than virtue signaling to BLM Marxists.
Oh, yeah, I hear you. All right, faith, work, family.
But it's
family.
Still John Cusack's fault.
Yeah, okay, that's good. I'll go with that. Family, work, faith. So I never lost my faith because I had to have it. I needed it. My family, you know, now that I'm trying to keep my composure here. Whew. Yeah, my brother got really sick right at the beginning of this pandemic. And because of the timing of the goddamn thing, he didn't make it, you know, because of things that were out of our control, you know, mainly this virus. You couldn't stay in the hospital after a major surgery for more than 5 days because they had to get him off the floor because they were afraid he would catch it. This was out at Edward Elmhurst, a very good hospital. Took very good care of him through the whole ordeal. But, you know, I just can't. I wish I could tell Fauci, I wish I could just say to that guy, how do you think you'd feel if you had a sibling or a granddaughter or somebody who died from something other than this virus because of this virus at an untimely age, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, how the hell do you think he would feel? And I'm sure my brother was marked down as a COVID death. I'm sure that he was, because these people count everything COVID. He didn't die from COVID. He died from the treatment of cancer because he couldn't get the help he needed in the environment that we lived in. And he was living that last year and a half. So my thought is he could probably still be here with us today if these people hadn't effed up this entire thing. And that's all I want to say today. Thank you for letting me talk.
Well, thank you,
Mary.
Okay.
We love you.
Sorry about your brother, obviously, and thank you for sharing that. I know that was tough. Appreciate that.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Nancy Pelosi is upset about a lot of things these days. She's upset that the Pope is still Catholic. She's upset that they're not talking about $3.5 trillion with respect to the socialist spendathon anymore. And she's upset that the media has underperformed in selling her agenda.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Our latest CBS News poll shows that only about 10% of Americans describe themselves as knowing a lot of specific things that are in the reconciliation package, and that the majority don't know anything at all. So do you think you need to do a better job at messaging? And going forward, how do you sell this? If ultimately you have to.
Well, I think
down.
You all could do a better job of selling it, to be very frank with you, because every time I come here, I go through the list. Family and medical leave, climate, the issues that are in there.
What in the world was that?
Yeah, she's upset that the Dem Socialist Comm Shop, the D.C. Press Corps, isn't properly selling the American people on the $3.5 trillion she outlined, you know, generically, to the extent she can remember a couple of the categories. Captain Kangaroo impersonator Janet Yellen, she's the Treasury Secretary. She also sat down to explain that the $600 threshold for your checking account balance or $600 worth of transactions, getting you assigned your very own IRS agent to monitor your household income and expenditures, financial transactions, that's not true. That's not true. It's just for billionaires who are all tax cheats.
Absolutely not. I think this proposal has been seriously mischaracterized. The proposal involves no reporting of individual transactions of any individual. Look, the big picture is that we have a tax gap that over the next decade is estimated at $7 trillion, namely a shortfall in the amount that IRS is collecting due to a failure of individuals to report the income that they've earned.
But that's among billionaires. Is that among people who are transferring $600?
No, it tends to be among high-income individuals whose income is opaque, and the IRS doesn't receive information about it. If you earn a paycheck, you get a W-2, the IRS knows about it. But high-income individuals with opaque sources of income that are not reported to the IRS, there's a lot of tax fraud and cheating that's going on.
Really? She makes it sound like every billionaire is a Mexican drug lord. Here's the facts. We went through this before, but let me go through it again.
Yes,
for
please.
Janet Yellen's edification. The average effective federal tax rate by income group, this is IRS data. The bottom 50%, the average effective federal tax rate, bottom 50%, 3.4%. The top 50%, 14.6%. If you want to break it down further, the top 25%, it's 16.8%, top 10%, 19.9%, top 5%, 22%, top 1%, 25.4%. So it's actually quite progressive and graduated, the average effective tax rate by income group as you go up in income. So, yes, are there one-offs where you have somebody that makes a lot more money than a nurse or a teacher that pays a lower effective rate? Yes, there are instances of that because of the opacity, to borrow, you know, opaque, the opacity of the tax system. So you want to make it more transparent than make it simpler. But but those are outliers. The average is clear according to IRS data. This is a lie that's being told by that Captain Kangaroo impersonator. So I guess the D.C. press corps does a better job of selling that lie along with all of the other lies Nancy Pelosi once sold. For more on this, pleased to be joined by the Wall Street Journal columnist, economist, and Trumponomics author Steve Moore. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys. Good morning. And by the way, Dan, I don't understand your anger and why you're railing against this. Do you not understand that all of this is free?
Come on.
Yeah, you get with the times. Look, I think the economy is in big trouble right now. I think we're seeing supply chain problems all over the world. We've got an energy crisis. We've got an inflation crisis. We've got a border crisis. I woke up this morning thinking, my God, what's happening to our country? And the idea that we're going to take the current situation we have and add $4 or $5 trillion of debt onto that is the nuttiest idea I have ever heard. I mean, is this country crazy? And the answer is no. Nancy Pelosi, I love that clip you played from her. Gee, you know, we're just not a good job of marketing what we're doing. Yes, they're doing a fine job. Americans understand what they're trying to do, and Americans are turning against it. The more people learn about this bill, the more the support for it drops, and for good reason. You see, by the way, I believe I'm making a prediction on your show that within about 6 weeks, you're going to be paying $5 a gallon for gasoline into the Chicago area because the prices are going up all over the world because there's a shortage of oil. Gee, why is there a shortage of oil? Oh, yeah, that's right, because Joe Biden doesn't want to produce it. And did you see Jen Psaki the other day was saying, she was asked about this. She said, well, this is just the cost we have to pay to deal with climate change. And like, gee, they didn't tell us that in the campaign.
No. And then store shelves are empty. I mean, staples that you normally get. I had to go to 3 grocery stores to find what I needed yesterday. Yep. And that scares me to the bone.
It should. You know, we're going to see, we are going to start to see shortages. There are now 50 ships, cargo ships, off the coast of California, off the coast of Long Beach, that cannot dock because they don't have the workers to unload the docks. By the way, this is a great example of how unions can just screw things up. You know, we should have dock workers 24/7, you know, unloading this stuff. Because of the dock workers are one of the most powerful unions in America. They're only going 8 or 10 hours a day. So you got these ships out there that are just sitting there waiting in the water. Some have been there for days and weeks, and it's causing big problems. You know, remember that I think we're all old enough to remember the Cabbage Patch dolls, everybody wants, and people are paying, you know, $100 for a Cabbage Patch doll. You're going to have a toy shortage. I hate to tell, I'm not trying to be the Grinch here, folks, but you know, get your Christmas shopping done early this year because the shelves. I think you are spot on, Amy. I think a lot of these shelves are going to be empty.
Maybe it's time for me to sell my stockpile of Beanie Babies then. Probably could get a good
price. Yeah. Dan, what was your Cabbage Patch doll?
I was a Beanie Baby guy. Okay. Not Cabbage Patch. Yeah. Garbage Patch. I went with the 2.0 version. You know, on the energy piece you mentioned, Steve, Emmanuel Macron, of all people, announcing France will invest €1 billion or whatever their currency is. Euros.
Thanks. Well, I guess they're euros, yeah.
In nuclear power by the end of this decade. Now, he started his presidency wanting to shut 14 reactors and cut nuclear's contribution to France's energy mix from 75 to 50% by 2035. Now he's in full reverse. You know why? Of course, you know why. Because renewables aren't delivering the energy that France needs to power its economy.
You're 100% right. And I could never understand the logic of this, by the way. I mean, a lot of things that the climate change industrial complex says are, you know, just false. But the logic of this, of saying, okay, we have a problem with carbon and greenhouse gas emissions, so therefore we're going to stop using nuclear energy. Huh? I mean, nuclear energy emits no carbon emissions whatsoever. And the solution, if you're really worried about climate change, then the solution would be obviously to build more nuclear plants. And yet you're right. France used to be, 80% nuclear. Now they're down to below 50%. Here's the other amazing thing. There's a natural gas shortage in the world because guess who's not producing as much natural gas? The United States. Right. And so the Europeans are now getting almost all of their natural gas from guess what country?
Russia.
And so they just, by the way, great news. The pipeline is finally finished. Oh, no, not the Keystone pipeline. The Nordstrom pipeline, which connects Siberia with Germany. Mm-hmm. So there was an article in Financial Times on Friday, and I'll quote it. This is a direct quote. They said, Western Europe is now, quote, hostage to Putin for their energy. Now, think about that. Is that the dumbest thing you've ever heard? I mean, Putin is going to be the richest person in the world, thanks to Joe Biden, because they can't get their natural gas from the United States because we don't have pipelines to get it, you know, throughout the United States, so we can get it on LNG, you know, and send it over there. This is a complete catastrophe. And now we've got a president of the United States. How embarrassing is this that the president of the United States, Joe Biden, has to go hat in hand to the Saudis and say, please increase your oil output? I mean, how is it good for the environment that we don't produce oil here, but he goes to the Saudis and asks them to produce more?
Yeah, I remember when energy independence was a goal of this country and achieved under Trump. But I wonder, Steve, are you jetting off with John Kerry to the climate conference in Glasgow, or are you afraid to be heckled by Greta Thunberg?
I mean, this climate change, it has become an obsession. It's become a religion. It's become a theology of the left. And look, most Americans are concerned about climate change. But if you ask the average day American, just go down on the street and ask, what are you concerned about? They're going to talk about health care. They're going to talk about inflation. They're going to talk about the economy, their job, their schools. And then you get down to about 15 on the list, and it's climate change. But in Washington, all they talk about is climate change. So this is exacerbating all of these problems. The inflation problem, I think, is getting worse, not better. And I got to tell you, here in D.C. area where I live, the biggest issue right now is this whole issue about the school boards and about how they're basically saying, parents, you have no involvement. We have too much parental involvement. That's the problem, Dan and Amy. The parents are
domestic terrorists
and things where they don't belong.
Oh, my God. And, Stephen, I just wanted to make you aware of this. I know you used to live here, well, you're from here, but Allstate and Northbrook, you know, they've been here for 50 years. They're selling their 186-acre campus because they realized we don't need this campus. We can work from home. So they're doing that. But now the ramification is they pay $4.7 million in property taxes, at least they did in 2021, and $1.9 million of that went to one school district, District 31. So they're worried this morning as another school district because they're going to have to do something to raise taxes to pay for schools, because that's a lot of money. That's 40% of their total taxes are collected from Allstate.
Well, when you have, you know, I think the lesson there is when you have anti-business policies and you treat your businesses like ATM machines, they leave. You saw what happened last week, right, guys, with Tesla leaving Silicon Valley, leaving the San Francisco Bay Area, and they're going to Texas. And by the way, that trail from California to Texas, that's getting pretty warm. I mean, you're seeing major, major technology companies now leaving the technology capital of the world, Silicon Valley. And the new technology capital is Austin, Texas, where they have no income tax. I mean, what is Illinois going to get with the program? And
well, we don't need
to reduce its cost.
Yeah, we don't need to. I mean, with Allstate selling off its property, we can just double the taxes on Michael Jordan's Highland Park home that he hasn't been able to sell in 20 years.
Oh, that's
and,
right.
And well, that'll make up the difference. No problem.
You should Airbnb it.
So, Steve, where are we at with, I guess, now the $1.5 trillion socialist spendathon? Is that going to go?
Well, you know, so this is, you know, I'm running this coalition called Kill the Bill. That's what Larry Kudlow says every day, Kill the Bill. So he's part of this. And I'll say this. First of all, they've now the real price tag of it, by the way, is $5 trillion because they weren't counting the last 3 years. So Nancy Pelosi announced yesterday, okay, here's how we're going to accommodate cinema Senator Sinema and Manchin, who are the two holdouts in the Senate, who say they want a small package. We're just going to call count 4 or 5 years of the 10-year clause, not the full 10 years. You know, it'd be like saying, oh, come to this college. It only costs $60,000 to degree. Oh, that's only for the first 2 years, not the full 4 years. They put these people in jail if they were private sector accountants. Right. I mean, they tried to cook the books like this. It is so outrageous and anti-police that we're not cutting back on our Build Back Better thing. We're just going to use phony bookkeeping. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. These guys lie, cheat, steal, do whatever they can to get this thing through. I think it's in big trouble. It's been punted into December. You, Amy, you and I and Dan are going to be talking about this on Christmas Eve virtually, you know, because I don't think they're anywhere close to getting it done. And not a single Republican yesterday in the House. I'm very proud of the Republicans for once. None of them voted for the debt ceiling extension, which really pissed Nancy Pelosi off. But the Democrats broke it. They're going to have to fix it.
Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, economist, Trumponomics author. Steve, thanks as always.
Hey, guys, have a great week. Take care.
You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Join Jeannie Ives and Breakthrough Ideas for a conversation on CRT and education with Chris Rufo, author, filmmaker, and researcher on the phenomena of critical race theory, homelessness, and poverty. Tickets and all the details for the conversation with Chris Rufo on October 28th. It takes place at the Abington Banquets in Glen Ellen. They're available at breakthrough-ideas.com. That's breakthrough-ideas.com.
Well, that'll be good. Yeah. Speaking of domestic terrorists challenging their school board's decisions on curriculum, on COVID policy, on all the rest, what would happen if particularly those domestic terrorists that don't have the means to write five-figure checks, sometimes pretty hefty five-figure checks, to send their kids to private school, could access education and savings accounts to have the choice that those big check writers have? Well, that's in part a study that was recently done by Martin Lucan, who's the director of EdChoice's Fiscal Research and Education Center, and he joins us now to discuss. Martin, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So you looked at the application of education savings accounts in New York State, we can extrapolate from there in Illinois with a population about 50% less than New York. What education savings accounts at different levels would allow parents choice, but would also, you know, and again, this is always lost on anti-school choice advocates, would also provide a lot of financial relief to the government school systems.
No, that's absolutely right. And that's actually how a lot of choice programs that have operated for decades have been designed. So the report that I wrote is about how ESAs can be designed to generate fiscal benefits for taxpayers. And in turn, these savings can be directed to help governments relieve pressures from strained budgets, such as in New York and Illinois.
Well, tell us how an ESA works and then what sort of impact it would have in New York to give us a sense of the scale we're talking about here.
Sure. So ESAs, or education savings accounts, they're like health savings accounts. But they're for K-12 education. Eligible families would basically receive a debit card or public funds in some way, and then they can use those funds to access a wide variety of approved education-related services. Not only could they use ESA funds for school tuition, but they could use it for things like tutoring, therapies, to access curricula, online courses, AP courses, even college courses. And some programs that already operate also allow families to roll over any unused funds to the next year or to put into savings for college. So they can use unused funds for college down the line. And then, so I look at an ESA program where eligible families would be able to receive an ESA worth two amounts, like $6,500 and $9,900. And one of these models is based, is similar to a model that West Virginia recently passed. And I estimated that taxpayers would experience savings worth between $94 million and up to $300 million in net fiscal benefits.
Well, do you think
it's a matter of design?
Well, could this happen in Illinois? I mean, we are in debt by billions of dollars, so I don't know if it would be feasible, but do you think it could happen?
Well, you certainly could design a program that would be beneficial for taxpayers. Now, whether a program would pass, that's the $64,000 question, right? And that's would be that's a political challenge.
$64,000 is about what we spend per pupil in the government schools. I'm exaggerating, of course, but it's more like, say, in Chicago, it's $27,000. So if you gave a parent $6,500, then, you know, that delta, the $21,000 your savings in taxpayer funds, and that parent can contribute tax-free to an ESA to send their kid to school they would send their kid to if they had those resources, now you start to see those savings you're describing.
Absolutely. That's right. So it certainly, and we've seen this in programs that already operate. 30 states already operate educational choice programs, whether they're vouchers or tax credit scholarship programs or education savings accounts. And I actually did a report for a choice where I studied the fiscal effects of these programs from whenever they started through 2018. And I estimated fiscal benefits worth between $12 billion and $28 billion. So that's up to $7,400 for every child who's participating in these programs. So it can happen for Illinois as well.
And that's significant money too. So thinking about even the federal support for K through 12, you know, places like Chicago Public Schools get about 10% of their budget for from the federal government. And so again, you know, money's fungible, but when you're taking that much pressure off the system, then you can focus those scarce resources to more productive ends, kids with special needs or other learning challenges, especially in addition to those that are at lower ends of the families or lower ends of the socioeconomic spectrum.
Absolutely. So there certainly are fiscal benefits from these programs, but there are also non-fiscal benefits too that I think that your listeners should be aware of. Researchers have been studying the effects of these programs for decades now. And so there's a very large body of evidence on how these programs work and how they affect students, families, communities. And the evidence overall is pretty positive. When states increase education opportunities for families, students participating in these programs benefit academically, and benefits extend beyond students in these programs. Parents are highly satisfied. When parents have skin in the game, they get more involved in their children's education. That's a plus. Communities benefit because choice improves civic outcomes like voting, volunteerism, tolerance. And importantly, students who remain in public schools also improve their outcomes. So when schools face increased competition, they improve and their students improve too. There's no harm there.
Well, this is baseline public choice theory too, right? Individuals spend their money more judiciously than do faraway governmental bureaucracies, and so you would anticipate that parents in control of the spend, rather than teachers' unions, effectively, they would do a better job of spending on behalf of their kid than does a teachers' union or a centralized school district.
No, absolutely right. Bottom line is that families know their own kids better than anyone else. And so they, when it comes to their educational needs, they are, when you put them in the driver's seat, you get better outcomes.
There was this unintentionally hilarious tweet from Nicole Hannah-Jones last week. She's the founder of the 1619 Project, of course, attempting to attack school choice but she sort of did a cell phone. She tweeted, "Why do school choice advocates never advocate eliminating school district boundaries, funding schools by local property tax, and allowing poor black students to attend white wealthy schools in neighboring municipalities? They really don't want choice, just privatization." In point of fact, that's exactly what school choice advocates want to do, is provide those opportunities disproportionately to minority students so they can get out of terrible schools and urban centers and enjoy the same opportunities that wealthier, disproportionately white students enjoy.
Absolutely. I mean, it's funny. I wrote a report with James Scholes, who's the dean of education now at Southeastern University, but in 2019, we wrote a paper called The Future of K-12 Funding, and that was exactly what it was about. It was what happens when you have a unified system of funding where you provide ESAs to families, and they can use that to access a school or education anywhere. So you get rid of the borders.
Well, you may want to forward that report to Nicole Hannah-Jones so that she can share it with the New York Times and they can get up to speed at what positions conservatives, or just generally speaking school choice advocates, not limited to conservatives, actually have versus the sort of fictional position that they try to impose on these programs. But it is encouraging to see not just what's happened during the pandemic in terms of people rethinking their K through 12 choices for their kids, but the pressure on legislatures to move in that direction too, to provide those benefits.
2021 was a huge year for school choice, largely, you know, because of the pandemic. You know, this year we saw 18 states that passed laws to either create a new educational choice program or to expand an existing program. And so this year, because of these legislative actions, more than 5 million additional students became eligible to participate in these new and expanded programs. So an additional 5 million students throughout this country now will have more educational opportunity. And it's encouraging because the quality and the breadth of these programs is much better than before as well. The number of ESA programs doubled from 5 to 10 this year. And I mentioned West Virginia earlier. West Virginia has the most expansive program in the nation with its new ESA program. They're about 93% of families would be eligible for this program. So overnight, West Virginia went from virtually, you know, having no choice at all to having the broadest choice program in the country. And choice supporters now widely consider West Virginia as the model when it comes to, expanding opportunity for families.
One of the few bright spots on the K-12 landscape, the movement in favor of school choice. He's Martin Lucan, Director of EdChoice's Fiscal Research and Education Center. Martin, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, pleasure joining. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. You're sure you don't want Come Join the Murder to be the official song of Chicago public school homecoming dances, and Chicago generally, our city song. Meet number 47. The 47th person accused of killing, trying to kill, or shooting someone in Chicago this year while awaiting trial for a felony. 47th.
Courtesy of CWB.
Shaquille Sankey, 28 years old. Shot a man who tried to stop him from beating his pregnant girlfriend over the weekend. According to the judge, adding insult to injury, he's got a pending armed habitual criminal case and a pending escape case. Not only that, he's convicted of two other gun cases before us, but they want to get guns off the streets. And he was walking around with a gun tied around his neck by a shoestring, which is not the proper way to carry a gun, by the way, just in terms of a gun safety. In case you didn't know, do not carry a weapon tied around your neck with a shoestring. He paid a total bail deposit of $600 to get out of jail on the previous pending charges. He went to his girlfriend's apartment early Saturday to confront her about a man she'd been talking to. He choked and battered the woman in front of her roommate and the roommate's male friend, while an armed man who came with Sankey stood by the front door. And then he shot the guy in the butt upon leaving. 47th person accused of killing, trying to kill, or shooting someone in Chicago this year while awaiting trial for a felony. Now, consider that case and the general lawlessness we have documented, thanks to CWB and others, just this year. Just this year. By the way, of those 47, there are 68 victims. 68 victims of people who were on bond for felony charges and then committed another felony. Just in 2021, 18 murders, 19 attempted murders, 2 attempted murder of a police officer, 15 aggravated battery with a firearm, 7 aggravated discharge, 1 reckless homicide, 1 reckless discharge that was fatal, and a couple of others. 68 victims. Violent crimes. And Kim Fox tells us that, you know, she can't do things like prosecute people who steal less than $1,000, for example, because she's focused the office's resources on violent crime. Really? And violent criminals. Huh.
And then she blames Chicago police, and then the mayor blames her, and then she blames Superintendent Brown. A lot of finger pointing going on.
Yeah, and then
but nothing's getting done.
Chief Judge Tim Evans, yep. And then Tim Evans says, we're just the judge. You talk to the prosecutor. You know, the merry-go-round. Exactly.
Yeah.
So now consider that, the situation on the ground in Chicago, against the backdrop of what Chicago FOP boss John Cantanzara had to say yesterday in terms of where his men and women, the men and women of the FOP, are on this vax mandate imposed by Triple Threat that has a Thursday midnight deadline before police officers who don't comply go on no-pay status. Here's Cantanzara laying out the situation and the FOP's position.
This is very clearly not a job action, not a call for a strike, none of that illegal stuff that I'm sure the city is going to try and make it out to be. If the city maintains its current course, come midnight on Thursday/Friday morning, members will be forced into a no-pay status that did not complete the portal information or subject to testing thereafter. That's their last position. Here's our position. The city from the beginning has said that the religious exemption is the same as the conscientious exemption allowed under state statute. It is not. It is totally separate. But they have not made an accommodation for that separate exemption. We will. We're going to provide 3 forms later today for religious, for medical, and for the conscientious exemption. We're asking members to submit those on Thursday, not anytime sooner. Submit those all on Thursday. Give everything at one time. And that's it. Do not fill out the portal information. You are under no obligation to do that other than the city's demand. Once you do that, we can never get that information back. We have no assurances from the city that that is secure, what that information is going to entail as far as going forward, who it's going to be shared with, etc. That is all part of the subjected mandatory bargaining that they have refused to do to this point. So do not fill out the portal information.
So if Lightfoot doesn't budge on the Thursday midnight deadline to fill out the information the city wants, and you have a lot of Chicago police instead take the advice and counsel of their president, their union president, here's what Cantanzara said you could expect this weekend.
Mm-hmm. All I can tell you is if we suspect the numbers are true and we get a large number of our members to stand firm on their beliefs that this is an overreach and they're not going to supply the information in the portal or submit the testing, then it's safe to say the city of Chicago will have a police force at 50% or less for this weekend coming up. That is not because of the FOP. That is 100% because of the mayor's unwillingness to budge from her hard line. So whatever happens because of that manpower issue, that falls at the mayor's doorstep. This could have all been avoided, but it literally has been like everything else with this mayor for the last 2.5 years. Do it or else, because I said so. Well, we say otherwise.
And think about it. Murders, shootings, carjackings are through the roof, and the mayor's putting approximately half the police department into a no-pay status. And these are officers who were there who never took a day off, even when they arrested suspects who had COVID. And a lot of them got COVID. That's why they don't want to get the vaccine. So they were essential, and we needed them. And now she thinks that we're going to survive even a night in Chicago with 2,000 or possibly even more police officers at home because of they didn't get vaccinated. It's ridiculous. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line.
You may want to consider packing up the family truckster and taking an excursion this weekend, or maybe an extended excursion if this comes to pass and there is an extended depletion of manpower the Chicago police have to put on the street. I mean, again, even with the non-prosecution culture, even with the police on their hind legs per the civilian political authorities, it just police presence is a deterrent. And now you're saying you're going to effectively, potentially, cut police presence in the city by half? Wow. And again, it's not the only big city that's dealing with this through the ham-handed vaccine mandates and the approach that these Democrat, Socialist, COVIDian politicians are taking. Seattle right now is facing the prospect of laying off 40% of its police force. And, of course, we all know what has happened in Seattle since last year's Summer of Love with the retirement and departure of police officers and violent crime in Seattle, like in every other major city controlled by Democrat, Socialist, COVIDians. The violent crime rates across all of the Class X felony categories spiking.
I don't know how she's, I mean, she caves all the time to the CTU and she never backs down and anything related remotely to our public safety. And she never backs down to the FOP. Do you think she will this time? I mean, if she doesn't, she's going to have blood on her hands. And then I'll sue her if anything happens to anybody in my family. I don't know for what, but I would.
Steve on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Zero sympathy. Zero. These guys, when BLM and all these other groups were tearing up the cities, they enforced these ideological standpoints for the mayor, and they didn't. They just went along because they were getting paid like good soldiers do, and now it's affecting them, and now they're upset. Now they're upset. You sold your souls to these people. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, with respect to BLM and the rioting that took place last summer, I mean, you know, what do you expect a beat cop to do when his commander gives him the order to stand down?
Well, they still took the overtime. They still took the overtime.
I mean, it's
an ugly situation, Dan, but bottom line is, and they don't realize that they are helping enforce the population into listening to these politically, ideologically driven things, and it's tearing the fabric of society apart. But now that it affects them, now they're upset. It's a tough situation, but hey, they sold their souls for the dollar.
All right, thanks for the call, Steve. By the way, Ken Zara said in solidarity with those that would go on no-pay status if this a paradigm endures through the deadline Thursday at midnight, he's going to go on no-pay status too.
Right. And I talked to him too, and he said, and I asked him, I go, have you been vaccinated? He goes, yeah, I have. And that was a personal choice I made. And I'm backing those who don't want to, who've had COVID, that think that they're, you know, their natural immunity, which is always left out of the conversation, they have stronger antibodies than those who have been vaccinated.
Well, right. I mean, this is one of the key issues, I think, is if you're not going to treat the naturally immune with antibodies that are equal to or superior to right. those who've been vaccinated, and all that would be required is an antibody test, if you're not going to exempt them from these mandates, in addition to honoring religious exemptions, medical exemptions, then you're not a serious person. You're just a COVIDian ideologue, and that's, of course, what we have. You know, I don't always agree with the FOP, but to some extent, you've got to take allies where you find them. And these pilots' unions and the police unions, some of the doctors and frontline healthcare workers that are calling out this hypocrisy and bad policy, definitely aligned with them on that. Scott and Aurora.
Yeah, I don't know if the police unions were doing this, the Chicago police unions were doing this, but, you know, we do know that the Democrats, you know, these unions are, you know, fund the Democrats, and they're not just, you know, leaning Democrat, they fund the Democrats. Is this just another example of them eating themselves? It's not just not the police unions, but, you know, the cities.
Well, yeah, the cities, yeah, thanks for the call, Scott. I mean, this is the snake eating its own tail. Well, sure. I mean, this is the culture that Chicago has embraced. These are the politicians they've embraced. I mean, we just, you know, mentioned a handful of them, but you could go up and down the power structure from Triple Threat to Grady at Cook County Board to Tim Evans to Fox to Welch to Harmon, obviously to Jelly Belly at the top of the pyramid, and that's got to be a real sturdy pyramid. That's what we've embraced. That's what the city wants. You look at the numbers. And that's what the suburbs want. You look at the numbers. Okay. Well, you're getting it good and hard. Stephen Niles.
I might disagree what Cantazaro wants to do, but I'll defend his right to do it.
Yep. All right, Steve.
Perfect, Steve.
Ralph and Rantoul.
Hey, good morning. You know, with this lawless mandate of getting a jab or else, get the jab or you're out of a job. And so people are accommodating to the best of their ability. You know, those who can't legally strike are going to figure out ways to hurt their employer, calling off sick, taking paid time off, whatever it is. You know, this is just the tip of the spear as far as the damage that's going to be inflicted upon us, even more damage by the Democrats. We're going to have economic slowdown as this starts working its way through all kinds of different places of employment. All right. I got a kid that works at Walmart. They got so much internal pushback in the headquarters down at the mothership down there in Bentonville, Arkansas, that the CEO backed off and said, I guess we're not going to fire anybody because they had an October deadline. Get the jab or you can't come into work because they've all been working remotely, or we're going to fire you. They had to back off because internally they were smart enough to listen to their 2 million employees that said, really? You really think we're going to comply? Do you like your $900 billion worth of retail? How much do you think that's going to suffer if a few of us, well, stop working for you? We've got more power than we're exercising. I think just sometimes we lack the courage to push back.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Ralph. Good point. And I think, you know, that you see these unions and or just employee groups, like you're saying at Walmart, using their leverage. It is encouraging. Doug in South Loop.
Yeah, a question for you. I find it hard to believe that Lightfoot didn't anticipate this pressure. So my question is, do you think she thought the police would back down, or do you think she thought the chaos would ensue and she wanted to bring pressure on the police through the chaos?
Oh, she thought people would be compliant. Thanks, Doug. And get vaccinated. That's
maybe
what their end goal is. For some reason, they're so obsessed with this.
I mean, it's hard
like
to crawl.
Like they're getting kickbacks or something.
It's hard to crawl in the mind of somebody who is so politically unskilled as Lori Lightfoot. But I would say if she thinks that this will bring the chaos, and it will, I mean, we have chaos already. Now cut the police force in half in terms of on duty. It's hard to imagine how much more chaos could ensue, but it will be more. If she thinks that this brings them to heel and she can play the finger-pointing game over vaccine mandates because they're popular in Chicago against the backdrop of people being slaughtered in the streets, I think she is making a terrible, I mean, obviously from a human life definitely perspective, she's making a terrible calculation, but she's making a terrible political calculation. I don't care if people support the vaccine and mask mandates. I don't care if they support Biden coming over the top federally. If you see kids getting gunned down and you see predators ruling the roost in the city, that is like first order priority for most commonsensical people, even those who consider themselves on the left. I don't think she wins that if you're just looking at it through a political prism. I think it's a terrible miscalculation, but we'll see, because I don't think Canzaro and FOP is going to back down. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.